I'd like to welcome to the stage now Jeremy Ran. Jeremy is the lead application engineer at Namecoin and a researcher on Tor TLS interoperability. He's going to be talking today about a technical deep dive into how Namecoin's blockchain can replace the centralized certificate authorities to provide decentralized PKI for Tor and regular web browsers. We're going to go in and get him set up right now, and then we'll get started right away. Just a heads up, guys, if we could go ahead and have everyone kind of pack in just a little bit closer to each other. I know that we like to keep our distance, but we have a lot of people coming in and out during presentations, so as long as there's open seats along the sides, that would be super helpful. Thank you, everyone. All right, without further ado, Jeremy Rand, everyone.
All right, hello, everyone. Good morning. I'm Jeremy from Namecoin. I'm going to be talking about some adventures I had recently building a public key infrastructure on top of Namecoin and Tor. Let's get started, shall we? So I was going to tell you guys what TLS was, but Hendrik already did a great job explaining what TLS was. It's the S in HTTPS. The key point here for this talk is that TLS requires certificate authorities, or CAs, to establish trust. And there's a problem here, because the public CAs are a censorship risk. They are centralized, trusted third parties. Sci-Hub had their certificates revoked at one point due to a copyright lawsuit. Meanwhile, Let's Encrypt, they're based in the U.S., and they revoke certificates based on U.S. sanctions compliance. And Let's Encrypt says themselves that they do this to about one website per month, which seems problematic. Also, the public CAs are a wiretapping risk. I think everyone here is probably familiar with the DigiNotar incident from 2011, where a CA got compromised and Iranian users got wiretapped. You may not be aware of a different case in 2013. The Saudi government approached Moxie Marlinspike and asked to pay him to help them wiretap users by legally compelling a public CA in Saudi or UAE jurisdiction to issue fraudulent certificates. This incident might explain why Saudi intelligence, according to the New York Times, then paid a Twitter employee to try to wiretap me in 2014, which might be because my TLS research threatened that CA-related effort. Perhaps unsurprisingly, the Trump Department of Justice declined to prosecute that wiretap-backed violation. So are there alternatives to the CA system? Well, in the DNS world, we have these things called TLSA records. The idea is you look up a TLSA record for a domain name, and you get back a public key. And you can then use that public key as a domain name specific CA that can authenticate TLS certificates for that domain only. And this avoids trusting the public CAs. The problem then is that you're trusting the DNS registrars and registries and ICANN, so you're really just reshuffling the list of trusted third parties rather than eliminating them. But what if we had self-authenticating domain names? And what I mean by this is, imagine you had domain names that are inherently tied to cryptographic material so that you can authenticate them without needing any third party. Do these exist anywhere? Why, yes, they do. I think everyone here is probably familiar with Tor Onion services by now. They're anonymously hosted. They're kind of slow. But most importantly, they have this interesting-looking domain name structure. And that's basically an ED25519 public key that's been stuffed inside the domain name. And so the domain name is quite inherently linked to that public key. There's also Namecoin. Namecoin is basically like the DNS, but on a blockchain. It does not require Tor, and therefore lookups are about as fast as DNS. For example, federalistpapers.bit is an example of a Namecoin domain name. And Namecoin domains are owned by a Namecoin address in the same way that Bitcoins are owned by a Bitcoin address. It's the same address format. And so, a Namecoin address is inherently tied to the domain name that it owns. So what could we do with this? Well, we could do something sort of similar to TLSA records, but if we have self-authenticating domain names, we're avoiding public CAs and also avoiding trusting the DNS. So that seems like a win. Now, by the way, I know what some of you are thinking here. Wait, why do we want to even use Onion services and TLS? Because Onions are already encrypted, right? So Onions are encrypted, sort of, but TLS has better end-to-end security. And what I mean here is Onion service encryption is terminated at the Tor daemon, whereas TLS is terminated at the application. This matters quite a lot in some situations. For example, Hunix has Tor browser running in one VM and the Tor daemon running in another VM. And those two VMs mutually distrust each other. They are in different trust domains. And you might also have a web server running in Hunix in the same way. It doesn't have to be the client. And critically, neither the client nor the server will have any way to know whether the other has a threat model like that. So you should probably assume that threat model could be active. Another situation that happens sometimes is the Tor daemon and the application might have an insecure network connection to each other. For example, a lot of websites run a Tor daemon and an HTTPS server on different cloud infrastructure IP addresses, so that you can access the Onion service through the Tor daemon, and you can access it directly via the HTTPS server. Similarly, you might run Tor browser on a laptop using a Tor daemon on a Wi-Fi router. This is less common, but it is a thing. And again, neither the client nor the server has any way to know whether the other has a threat model like this. So again, you should assume this could be a thing. TLS also helps compatibility. Kosha mentioned this in the Akupa talk a little bit. Applications expect TLS to be there. Web browsers will show scary warnings if they don't have TLS, and they will restrict features as well, things like webcam access. And generally speaking, it's easier to just give applications the TLS they want rather than trying to patch them. Tor browser does have patches for this kind of thing, but they are a huge maintenance nightmare. All right, so how do we get TLS implementations to actually use self-authenticating domain names for TLS? Well, we can't use TLSA support and hijack that because there basically aren't any TLS implementations that have TLSA support. That feature has pretty much been rejected by the community. Now, what we really want here is, imagine we had a pluggable certificate trust API. That could basically do what we want, right? Well, sadly, there's no web extensions API for this because the browser vendors don't want it. But there is another kind of browser add-on, PKCS 11 modules. You've probably heard of these because this is how you add smart cards or HSMs to a web browser. What you may not know is that browsers like Firefox use PKCS11 as a database query API for TLS certificates. As examples of this, Firefox ships with a built-in root CA list. It's in a file called libnssckbi.sl. That's where, you know, Let's Encrypt, Komodo, et cetera, live. And that's actually a PKCS11 module. Firefox also has a SQLite-based trust database called SoftToken. So if you import your own CA into Firefox, it gets stored there. That's also a PKCS11 module. So how does PKCS11 actually get used for this purpose? So basically, when Firefox sees a certificate that's signed by a CA it hasn't heard of, it takes the issuer name of that certificate, and it passes that issuer name to the PKCS11 module. And the module responds with the full certificate of whatever CA that corresponds to. What's an issuer name, you ask? Well, it looks very much like this. It's basically a list of text fields. So in this case, there's a country, an organization, and a common name. Sometimes there are other fields, like a serial number. You may have noticed some things that are not in that issuer name. There's no public key or signature, because those live elsewhere in the certificate structure. What that means is our PKCS11 module can just make those up. It doesn't have to match anything that was in the request the browser sent. There's also nothing in there about which domain names it's valid for. That lives in the name constraints field, which is also elsewhere, and our module can make that up as well. Okay, so then, you know, if we get that issuer name, how do we know what we want our module to make up for that particular case? So what if we give a hint? What if we put a hint in the issuer name of our TLS certificate? So what we do is we stuff a domain name into the common name subfield of the issuer name. We stuff a public key into the serial number subfield of the issuer name. And then we sign the public key with an onion service key or a Namecoin address. And we stuff that signature into the serial number subfield as well. So as an example of that, I have the screenshot here. So I'm signing a message with a Namecoin address. So as you can see, the message has domain www.federalistpapers.bit. And it also has a field x509pub, which is the TLS public key that's being signed. And yeah, it says message signed. We've got a signature at the bottom. So then we can put that signature into an issuer name like this. So as you can see, the common name subfield of the issuer name says www.federalistpapers.bit. The serial number is a JSON structure that has the public key and signature in there. So the way this winds up working is our PKCS11 module checks that pub key and signature from the issuer serial number against the domain name that's in the issuer common name. And basically, our module confirms that, yes, the public key in question really was signed by whoever owns that domain name. And assuming that that check passes, then our module returns a newly generated CA that has the given public key in it. And our module assigns a name constraint for that given domain name, so it's only valid for that domain name. And it cross-signs it with a locally trusted root CA. And that's enough to make the TLS client happy. So the way you would set this up is if you're trying to create a TLS certificate for the server side, we have a tool called ncgencert where you put in a host name. In this case, we're doing an onion service. And this command will output a certificate chain and private key that you can put into your TLS server, like Caddy, for example. And on the client side, you have to install a PKCS11 module. In Firefox, this is very easy. There's a security devices dialog for that. And once you've done that, TLS with onion services and Namecoin-based authentication will work. And here is an example of this working. So this is Tor browser loading an onion service site with TLS, and it's being authenticated by the onion service key. So it actually does work. Now, you may be wondering about compatibility here. So Any application that uses NSS or GNU TLS knows how to use PKCS11 to do this. So that covers Firefox and Tor browser, among other things. But what about Chromium? So Chromium looks up unknown certificate authorities using a totally different mechanism. So Chromium checks a field called AIA, or Authority Information Access. It does not check the issuer name. Now, the AIA field, as you can see in this example, it's just a URL where Chromium tries to download the missing CA's certificate from. So we can actually stuff stuff into that field in basically the same way. We can run a localhost HTTP daemon that responds to AIA lookups, and we can stuff the same metadata that we stuffed into the issuer name into the AIA location, and you get this very nice long URL that accomplishes the same thing. So when you combine PKCS11 and AIA, that covers basically all major TLS implementations. The one major outlier is OpenSSL. It uses a different API. We don't support OpenSSL's API yet, but it is very analogous to PKCS11. We expect it should be pretty straightforward to support. We just haven't gotten to it yet. Something you might have noticed here is Tor Onion services are using ED25519 keys. Namecoin addresses, meanwhile, are using Bitcoin script, which is a non-standard elliptic curve, but which also has multi-sig and time lock functionality added. TLS implementations, meanwhile, only support ECDSA using standard NIST curves. But this actually works out fine, because the signature is being validated by the PKCS11 module, not by the TLS implementation. So the TLS implementation doesn't care. There's a couple of edge cases that apply to Namecoin here. Basically, Namecoin supports smart contracts, and in practice what that means is you can have multiple Namecoin addresses that simultaneously control the same Namecoin domain name. And you can also have different Namecoin addresses controlling different subdomains of a Namecoin domain name. In practice, the way that affects us is the issuer name or the AIA URL have to encode which Namecoin address and subdomain were involved in that. So something you may have noticed about the scheme I just described is we're not broadcasting these signatures to everyone. These signatures are being conveyed inside the TLS handshake as part of the TLS certificate chain. This is really important for scalability because TLS handshake bytes are extremely cheap, whereas broadcasting stuff in, say, the Namecoin blockchain will be very expensive because everyone has to download that. The Onion Service DHT is not quite as expensive, but TLS handshake bytes are still cheaper. And crucially, this expensiveness difference becomes magnified once we start dealing with post-quantum signatures like dilithium, which will increasingly become common. Okay, so I've covered TLS. What about other protocols like SSH? So SSH does have this thing called SSHFP records in DNS, which work very much like TLSA records. And unlike TLSA records, SSHFP records actually do have pretty widespread software support. OpenSSH supports these. But the problem is that would require broadcasting those SSHFP records in either the Namecoin blockchain or the Tor Onion Service DHT. And as I just said, that's not great for scalability. So can we keep that inside the SSH handshake like we did with the TLS handshake? So you may not know this, but SSH actually has certificates and CAs. This is not a super common thing. It's mostly an enterprise thing. But we can take advantage of that because SSH certificates can have extensions in them. These have a similar role as the issuer name or the AIA field. And so we can stuff a signature into an SSH certificate extension. Conveniently, OpenSSH has an option called the known hosts command option. Basically, you can configure OpenSSH so that when you connect to an SSH server, it runs a command that you specify, and it passes the certificate it got into that command. And that command can then choose to mark it as trusted. So we made a command for that. It shares most of its code in common with the PKCS11 module and AIA daemon that I described for TLS. I have an example here. So here you can see that I SSH'd into a domain that I have test10.bit. And as you can see, it did not ask me to verify a fingerprint. It verified on its own that the SSH certificate that test10.bit was serving really did match what was signed by the namecoin address. And so it very promptly just asked me for a password. Kind of cool. Now, everything I've described so far works great in good scenarios. What about if you have a disaster and you need to urgently revoke a certificate? So PKCS11 does support querying for revocation status as well. The query is keyed by the issuer name, as before, and the certificate serial number. You can put issuer and serial pairs in the Namecoin blockchain or the Onion descriptor, and PKCS11 will be able to tell that those are revoked. For Chromium and other things that use AIA, we're honestly not sure yet. We think we might be able to use OCSP in a similar way that we use AIA, but that is to be determined. We're not sure if there might be quirks that we're not aware of. For revoking SSH host keys, this is pretty easy as well, because OpenSSH passes both the CA pub key and the host pub key when it's passing stuff to our command. So we can check both of those against a revocation list that's in the Namecoin blockchain or Onion descriptor and choose not to mark it as trusted if it is revoked. Now, as I mentioned, we are doing stuff with Onion services. Tor users tend to expect anonymity. They get very unhappy if they're not anonymous. Tor browser has an anonymity feature called FPI, first-party isolation. Basically, what this means is if you have two different browser tabs that have two different subdomains of the same website open, they will share a Tor circuit. But if you have two different tabs in Tor browser that are for two different websites, they will use different Tor circuits. And any sub-resources for a given website use the same Tor circuit as the website they're a part of. Now, the point here is this prevents ad networks from tracking you across websites. The problem here is if we're doing a Namecoin lookup or we're looking up an Onion descriptor, that can generate some network traffic. And neither PKCS11 nor AIA have any mechanism to tell us which first-party domain actually corresponds to that request. And so we don't really have any way to isolate things on different Tor circuits the way we want. So how do we fix that? So conveniently, before the TLS or SSH handshake can ever happen, Tor's control port API does notify us that a connection to that host name is about to happen. And happily, the FPI metadata is available in that notification. It's available there because we sent in a patch to the Tor daemon that added that metadata, and the Tor devs merged it. So thank you, Tor devs. Very much appreciated. So what we can do is we can do that Namecoin or Onion descriptor lookup at that time as soon as we get that notification. We can just cache the result. So we cache the domain and list of Namecoin addresses involved and any revocations. And at that point, once PKCS11 or AIA or SSH needs that information for authentication, it can just query that local cache, which produces no network traffic, which is also convenient for latency. And yeah, that cache isn't isolated per se, but there's not any state in that cache that can be used by a website to fingerprint you. So it preserves anonymity just fine. So I do want to thank our funders for this. We are funded by two different funding pools from NLNet Foundation, the Internet Hardening Fund and the Next Generation Internet Initiative. These are respectively funded by the Netherlands Ministry of Economic Affairs and Climate Policy and the European Commission. We're also funded by Power Up Privacy and Ciphers. So huge thank you to all of our funders for that. Here is my contact info. And yeah, if you have any questions, happy to take them. Cheers.
All right, okay, RAC first question, perfect. There we go.
Hello, Jeremy. I would like to thank you for your work since so many years. I'm following Namecoin since I would say, almost 10 years now, mm-hmm. and it's amazing what you're doing.
Thank you.
I have a question regarding to the parallel world and the connection of Namecoin and, for example, Ethereum ENS services, if they are aware of what you are doing with Namecoin, or if they are not, if they are implementing similar things, or you are collaborating in such fields.
So the question is about whether the Ethereum ecosystem is aware of what we're doing, basically?
If for example, ENS naming system in Ethereum is using the same technology as you are implementing.
Let's see. I'm honestly not sure whether any of the ENS people have any idea what we're working on. We generally don't coordinate very much with the ENS people very much. That said, if they wanted to use this code, it should work fine for them, I would expect. I guess one concern there would be that, last I heard, ENS doesn't really have any kind of lightweight resolver that doesn't involve a fully trusted third party, unless I've missed something. And so, you know, for things like Tor that are very bandwidth constrained, I would imagine that might be a concern. But other than that, I would expect this to work fine for other blockchain naming systems. There's nothing specifically Namecoin focused here.
Thank you.
Okay, next question. Up there, okay. I'll meet you, I'll meet you up here.
Thank you. Right, I have kind of two questions, but first question is, would this certificate authentication flow work if you were disconnected from the internet? So what is your offline experience?
So the question is whether this works when you're disconnected from the internet?
Yeah.
So TLS in general expects that you have a network connection to whatever server you're trying to get to. If it's an onion service, well, you're going to need to have at least a connection to Tor to get to an onion service. If it's a Namecoin domain, I guess you could have a Namecoin domain that, you know, points to, you know, an internal LAN IP or something, in which case maybe that's a legit use case. I haven't pondered it a whole lot. Generally speaking, Namecoin, so checking the data that's attached to a Namecoin name, it doesn't require that you have internet connectivity at that exact time, but if the blockchain is too stale, I believe more than about 2 hours, then it will start throwing warnings because it figures, well, we don't actually know if we're under attack. But yeah, like, let's say that 2 hour duration is okay for you and you're trying to connect to a LAN IP, I would expect that to work. I have not tried, but I think it'd work. You had a second question?
Are we good? Thank you. So my second question is about take away the Namecoin TLD and the Bitcoin, the Tor browser stuff, and assume you're actually trying to fake a real-world domain name. What would be the onboarding experience for a user who doesn't have this stuff installed locally, like the PKTSS11 module? Would there be a way to capture that journey and make sure that they could install it as a way of accessing that service?
I'm sorry, your mic is a little bit soft. It's hard to hear from here.
So I'm asking about if you're trying to use this system for a normal domain name, where you don't want to go through normal centralized TLS infrastructure, and if there's a way of capturing an onboarding journey for a normal user who's trying to access your system and then needs to be redirected somehow to the PKI CSS 11 module installation or something.
Okay, so basically you're asking about the scenario where a user doesn't have this software installed and they need to know how to get to it, basically? Yeah, I mean, right now if you access a .bit or .onion domain and you don't have Namecoin or Tor installed, it's not going to resolve. I would expect that whatever mechanisms you can use for onion services in general should work fine here as well. So I feel like that may be a better question for Tor people. But yeah.
All right, and that takes us to our time. If you have any other questions for Jeremy, feel free to find him afterwards. But we're going to keep things moving right along now. So let's give it up one more time for Jeremy.
Thank you.